happens at the hands of public officials or wannabe police. We usually think about young men, and of course, the Trayvon Martin case is something that all of us have felt so deeply connected to. But the point that I wanted to make is that actually, if you look at who the victims of violence are in this country and in the world, it's women, and we don't make that connection. So as important as it is to build the kinds of movements around the Trayvon Martin case and Oscar Grant and so forth, there was Peggy Pendleton in Chicago, but there's a connection between the violence that happens behind closed doors. Intimate violence, domestic violence. This is what anti-racist feminists have contributed to our analysis of the prison industrial complex and to abolition. Because early on, when people first began to talk about abolishing imprisonment, and I'm talking about the 70s, it wasn't the first time, but in the aftermath of Attica, there was a major discourse about prison abolition. But this was also when the women's movement was developing. And we were first learning how to talk politically about violence against women. And so there were some people who were saying, well, you want to abolish prisons? Precisely at the time when we figured out that we have to do something to hold all of these people accountable who are committing violence against women. So that was a moment that was an important moment, but a moment that contained many, many contradictions. And again, I wish I could continue with that, but I wanted to ask you to think about this, because to abolish prisons doesn't simply mean to abolish the institutions or abolish the practices. It's about abolishing all of the practices that make prisons necessary and important, and it's about abolishing those practices that are encouraged by and reproduced by imprisonment. And violence against women is certainly at the top of the agenda. So to abolish the prison industrial complex would mean also to figure out how to purge our world against these horrendous modes of violence.
Every raindrop. So one of the things that that we have in California, and people have all over, of course, is cops in schools. And often armed police. And I don't know about here. And then they have what they call resource officers. And so they, and see, this is really horrendous and insidious, because the resource officers actually work for the schools as counselors and sometimes teachers, but they are also connected to the police department. So their first loyalty actually is to the police department. And so what has happened over the last period is that things that used to be considered normal in school. I know when I went to school, you know, kids were always cussing out the teachers. You know? Yeah. But now you can get arrested for that. Or getting into a scuffle with another student. Now you can get arrested for that, and you can actually get sent to juvenile hall. So the links that we're trying to make with the extent to which schools have come to follow in the footsteps of prisons, as a matter of fact, the prison is a model now for schools in communities of color, in poor communities of color. And in a sense, it's like finishing school for juvenile hall and then prison. And so we've done, I mean, I personally have been doing a lot of work with the juvenile hall facility that's 5 minutes away from my house, and I figured, you know, I cannot live in this neighborhood and not go in and talk to these kids periodically. So there is this wonderful program that's run by a librarian whose name is Amy Cheney. It's called Right to Read, and she brings in authors and has money to purchase the books of those authors for the kids who are in the program. So they all get a copy of the book. They read the book. Then the author comes in and gives a talk, and the kids get to engage with it.
That's beautiful.
And I've gone in several times. I said, okay, every time I publish a book, I'm going to go in. And it's just, it's so amazing because you see, talking to the boys, you see these kids who are, you know, supposed to be gang members, and they're supposed to have committed all of these violent things, and they're just so wonderful in the conversation. And every time I go, at the very end, they all want to come up and give me a hug. Every single one of them. I mean, it was just, and I mean, you can see there's so much promise there. And the fact is that these kids never had the opportunity to engage in that kind of conversation before. So, education in the prisons, but also education instead of incarceration. We have to transform the very character of education. Because education for poor people, for poor black, Latinos, in poor white communities, has actually become a question of discipline and not of education. And education has always been important to producing the capacity to imagine the future. One cannot imagine the future without being educated. And I'm not talking about school education, because some people who never have gone to schools are far more educated than others. But what I am saying is that the very nature of how education is addressed in our schools has to be changed. Teachers have to stop assuming that their main job is to discipline the kids, but rather it's about teaching kids how to imagine the future.
I did.
some way, somehow, Lord knows I failed. Yes, I did. Now all I have in my pocket, Lord have mercy, all I can give account of is a nickel and a nail. I want to say it one more time.
That we may never see in our lifetimes. And it may be many generations before they fully come to fruition. But we need that combination of patience and passion and fervor. Because if we do not do this work, it will not only be the case that we ourselves will never benefit, but coming generations may never get to imagine the possibility of inhabiting a world without violence.
On this week's episode of Education Justice Radio, we listen to Professor Davis talk Abolishing the Prison Industrial Complex about issues of mass imprisonment, prison abolitionism, and social justice. We also listen to her responses given at a breakfast meeting at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. We would like to thank our EJP students at Danville Correctional Center for their valuable critical feedback. Education Justice Radio is a program of the Education Justice Project, and our mission is to provide a forum for expression and discussion about educational and incarceral issues. We invite your comments, suggestions, and volunteer support. Write us at educationjusticeradio@educationjustice.net.
She was going into Soweto, and these black guys, kids, saw her, and you know, to them, she was a white girl. She represented apartheid or whatever. Anyway, she was stoned to death, the most horrible kind of death. But to make a really long, complicated story short, the mother and father became involved with a couple of the boys who killed her. Through the Truth and Reconciliation. And one of them especially became one of the leaders of the Amy Gill Foundation. And so the thing that the mother said was that I learned to look into his eyes and see them as the last eyes that saw my daughter alive. And I learned to embrace him. I learned to love him. So that, I mean, to me, that is the most incredible kind of story. And I like to use it because it's a promise.
just fine.